everyone, and thank you so much for tuning into our Talent Advantage Path podcast series. This is part two of a two-part podcast series on how to be a better job candidate by showing thought leadership, team building, and self-development. Make sure to follow us to receive updates on our next upcoming podcasts. Today's topic will be on being a leader and thought leadership. We have two special guests with us today. I'd like to introduce Michael Neuendorf. He is a certified executive coach, trainer, and professional speaker, as well as the CEO of Build and Balance. He's been in business since 2008 and works primarily with SMBs in Northern California, though he has clients all across the U.S. His passion is professional development and helping people to better their business lives. Michael, would you like to say a few words about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Amy. First, I want to show appreciation for being invited to be on the podcast with Alexis. I'm honored. Secondly, I'm grateful to be in business now for almost 12 years. Now, it's interesting that I chose 2008 as the time to start my business. And as you might recall, that was during the mother of all recessions or the Great Recession. And so it was kind of a rocky start. And then I had a good run. And now we're in the midst of the pandemic. And so it's another interesting dip in the business climate, right? But this time I have been in business long enough that I'm able to be creative, do different things, and continue to carry on even through challenging times. And I think that being in business really brings out that kind of innovation and creativity and resilience that you often hear talked about. And I'm just happy to continually face this challenge to be in business. And I just hope that today some of what I share is helpful to the people that listen to this podcast.
Now I'd like to introduce Alexis Lucio. Alexis Lucio is a queer Latinx accessibility and inclusive design lead at Splunk in Southern California. By day, Alexis ensures that digital products are enjoyed by users of all abilities and lived experiences, and is involved in the Employee Resource Group, ERG, development. By night, she also engages with the LGBT community through dance and performance. Alexis, can you say a few words about yourself?
Sure. First off, similar to Michael, thank you so much for having me. Clearly, it's been a long week, and I will come into my more extroverted self. I do want to give an Indigenous land acknowledgement. I am sheltering in place in modern Los Angeles, which is a Tongva land that has been taken by colonizers. So something that I do as part of my inclusive practices when giving public presentations is always doing an Indigenous land acknowledgement. For folks who may have low to no vision, and because this is a podcast, I also like to do speaker descriptions. So today I have my brown hair tied up in a ponytail with bangs, am wearing some Indigenous hoop earrings, and have this very vibrant, colorful button-up shirt.
Thank you so much. I am wearing a blue shirt myself. Let's quickly talk about TAP and the program we have at ACS for a moment. So the Talent Advantage Path is the route to get the most from your job, your career, and your calling. We provide a wide range of resources to help you increase your marketability and value. We offer training in self-development, team development, visibility, leadership, work-life balance, and volunteering your talents as an effective way to gain more experience. Today's employers are not just looking at your job history. More and more, they are looking for passion, engagement, and the capacity to go above and beyond. We have developed tools and resources that make sure you are doing everything you can to be a more desirable candidate and land the job that you are looking for. So without further ado, let's get into our questions to our two thought leaders. Let's start with Michael. Tell us about the steps you took to quit your full-time job and start your business.
Okay. Well, first thing you need to know about myself is that I love being in business. When I was 15 years old, I started my first business selling bicycle parts to my friends. I wanted to have the best bicycle in my rural town in southern Arizona. And my newspaper route wasn't really enough to invest in my bike. And so I got a business license and created relationships with bicycle parts distributors and started selling bike parts to my friends. And that put me up against the one bike shop in town. And eventually I lost because I was 15 and they were in business, and they talked to the distributors and said, "You're selling parts to a kid. Now that's not a real business. It's a kid. So then they shut me down, but that was my first foray in business, and I never lost my taste for entrepreneurship. So when I was working in my last corporate job, I was having a good time, challenged, loved the work that I did, the people that I worked with, but I felt this yearning to be in business for myself. And so I kept telling my wife year after year, I think I'm going to quit and start my own business. And after 5 years, she finally said, okay, look, either you have to do it or you got to stop talking about it because I'm tired of hearing this every year. So then I pulled the trigger and it was 2008. And, you know, my timing's not always the best. That sometimes I make decisions at the wrong time, but usually for the right reasons. And so things worked out and I've really enjoyed being in business. And the reason that I love being in business, Amy, I want to hark back to something that you said. It's about passion and engagement and helping people, that I'm all about professional growth and development. That's what I've dedicated my life to now. And I truly believe that I found my calling to do this for the rest of my life, that I will continually be dedicated to helping people to better their business lives. And I do that through the coaching that I do one-on-one. I work with groups. I get to do team trainings. I get to do webinar presentations now instead of live in-person presentations. And so I'm doing it in different mediums in some cases. I get to do it through my YouTube channel. And I know we'll be talking about social media a little bit later. It's just great. I love being in business and helping people, and to be able to be paid to do what you love, it is a cliched statement, but it really is a dream come true.
That's amazing. Super inspiring. I love that bit about your wife, because there's like this quote that says, you can't build a reputation on what you're going to do. So sometimes it's just taking the first steps, even if it's not perfect at all. So so you've had the chance to speak with a lot of small business owners and executives during your path, I hear. And you also have a lot of experience as well with marketing and sales development. So what's the best advice that you have for people that might want to pursue a creative path as an executive coach, public speaker, or business owner, kind of how you did before you got into, you know, the current position that you're in now?
Yeah, that's a good question. And really covering kind of a wide range of thought there. I do have sales and marketing experience. I was previously a marketing director before I went out on my own. And I think what's important is a couple of things here. One is get educated, right? That I believe in getting educated and learning from people who have either walked your path, know the topic that you'd like to become an expert in. Learn from them. It's one of the reasons you're listening to today's podcast, because you're hoping that you're going to learn something from Alexis and me and Amy as well that's going to help you to better forge your career path. Next is surround yourself with some people that are really good for you, really positive and uplifting, and believe in what you believe in, and will encourage you and support you in your growth, because you really want to challenge yourself. This environment right now is really competitive, but regardless of the environment, it's always competitive. We live in a competitive world that is becoming further competitive, or I should say even more competitive because of globalization. So you always want to be differentiating yourself and thinking about how to be the best. And when you surround yourself with people who are working on a similar path to be their best, it continues to push you. And so I take training programs. I associate with very successful people. And I read the writings of successful people. I usually listen to a lot of audiobooks each year, and I join training programs to just continually push. So I think those are some of the keys.
Super amazing. I love that. And of course, surrounding yourself with the right people is also important. We're also going to be talking about networking in a little bit as well. So I want to switch gears now and redirect the questions over to Alexis, who has a really fascinating story, but very completely different. So can you tell us more about how you got into advocacy in UX?
Yeah, so this one is pretty interesting. And I know, you know, we've brought up the idea of failure, and I actually don't like using the word failure, because failure implies that you did something wrong. In fact, you should fail. There's a quote from the Stanford D School that says, fail early, fail often, which we often use in design thinking methodology. And there's such a negative connotation to failing when it's really exploring. Like, I've been out of college for, 5 or 6 years now. And for me, a lot of it is just figuring out what is there in the world. So for me, I wanted to go into college as a chemical engineer. I was so gung-ho. I'm developing this, like, crazy reverse methane gas cycle and solving global warming. And after my first week of a freshman introductory seminar, I dropped the class because I hated it. And I was like, I can't do this for the rest of my life. A week later, I was at our activities fair and someone said, well, hey, how would you like to have a degree that combines engineering with art, color, psychology, and talking to people? And I had never heard of that before. And it turns out my alma mater is one of the 5 U.S. colleges that offers a product design degree. So a lot of it is just luck and, you know, being open to opportunities. And also for me, as someone who is part of multiple marginalized groups, so I'm a first generation high school and 4-year college grad. I identify as queer. I identify as Latinx. Like, my mom immigrated to the States when she was 15, didn't know anybody, didn't speak the language, didn't have a set job. So to have someone be that kind of role model really instilled 2 things, a sense of resilience in me that I, you know, had to have grit, I had to persevere, and also like education is a means to success. As I grew older, I realized, well, who gets to define success? And it's typically folks who have had generational wealth, who maybe have parts of systems that benefit them a lot. So I had to change my definition of what success and advocacy look like to be just the role model that I wanted to see. So because, you know, I grew up in a Mexican household, media told me that the most I could ever be was a background dancer in a music video, a talk show host, or, you know, a news anchor. And that none of those things really rang to me like design. So as I started in my career, similar to actually what Michael said, you start finding people who look like you and you talk to them. And you're like, can I, this is such a Silicon Valley buzzword, but like, can I pick your brain? Can I take you to coffee? Because here's where I'm at. And especially for me, seeing folks, I just had a talk with a mentor recently who's also queer and Latinx and about 15 years my senior. And when I first met her, I was like, I've never seen someone who looks as much like me as you do. Can I please talk to you? Because obviously the system works very differently for me than a cishet, able-bodied, very well-educated white male. So, you know, in doing that, I started getting more involved in storytelling, talking my own story, like being visible as a queer first-gen Latinx is really important because that's what can inspire the generations who come after me and continuing to open doors by being in leadership positions. One big quote that I have from a past mentor is leadership and management are not exclusive. So no matter what age you are not excluded from leadership. At any point in time, you have an ability to step in and be a leader in organizations. So I primarily do that through employee resource group work. I co-lead our Latinx ERG at Splunk and I'm involved in our Pride group, which is LGBTQIA star employee resource group. One day while I was doing my UX work, our head of design brought me into an office. And after assuring me 3 times that I wasn't going to be fired because, imposter syndrome's real, he looked at me in the eyes and said, you know, I've noticed that you've been speaking so much about your story and you've been doing all this diversity, equity, and inclusion work, which I argue to folks is not DEI work. That's just my lived experience and my reality. And he said, how would you like to think about diversity and inclusion beyond race, gender, and sexual orientation? And I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I said, yes. So I'm actually Splunk's first accessibility designer ever, which is very crazy to be, you know, this quote unquote young in my career and be one out of 6,000 employees making sure that we have accessibility compliance in an entire product suite. And also just like paving my way of a brand new department and a brand new team. So for me, to answer your question very long-windedly, I really love my job because I get to advocate for folks who really do need to have their voices heard. Like, we live in a very ableist society, I argue, and unfortunately, there's not a lot of web accessibility. If you look at the top 1 million web pages on the World Wide Web, only about 2% are accessible with assistive technologies such as screen readers, keyboard interactions, or even available for folks who have low to no vision or folks from the deaf and hard of hearing community may have a motor impairment, all of these things. So a lot of what I do now is just really being what I wanted growing up, that someone was championing for me when I wasn't in the room, that someone enabled me to have a comparable experience, especially with, you know, this pandemic and sheltering in place. We really have to rely on the World Wide Web And unfortunately, there's not a lot of accessibility for folks who are already marginalized in a pre-COVID world.
Awesome. So that was a really amazing answer. I really love especially what you said about like failing early and failing often. Looping back to the talent advantage path, and this is a really big topic for what we promote. I think you've touched a little bit about this, but can you tell me more about how working inclusivity has like really helped your career or like kickstarted certain things that you've really wanted to do, like passion projects and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like the backbone of my career and at least doing my job well is inclusivity, right? So I think especially in the rise of the Black Lives Matter movement and everything going on, there's this huge surge in diversity, equity, inclusion, equality, and all these buzzwords that Silicon Valley loves to latch onto. And I want to make an important distinction based on some of the work of really great folks who have lived experiences that, you know, diversity is getting asked to a dance. Inclusion is being asked to dance. Justice is throwing your own dance. So to make sure, I just like love the idea of inclusivity because it makes you feel safe, especially as an employee resource group lead, making sure that there are inclusive environments and that not only are folks validated in their lived experiences and honored, but to the point where they feel like they are in a psychologically safe environment to do their best work. Because if you're always on edge, if you're always suffering from microaggressions, if you're always invalidated, you know, people often talk about BIPOC, which is, stands for Black Indigenous People of Color, as marginalized groups or underrepresented minorities, underrepresented groups in tech. And I'd like to reframe that to historically underestimated or historically undervalued. Because the truth is, we can do these jobs as well, if not better, than anyone else. And we never get an opportunity to do that because of biases that are already placed within our system and assumptions that people make by looking at folks like us, say the color of our skin or how our gender expression is. And it's such a shame because we can do so much more if we put down this defensiveness and this urge for perfectionism. Like, that's just not possible. Inevitably, we're going to make mistakes. And it's those things, when we accept, you know, something we might not have done well with humility, and then say, okay, well, what does a more inclusive method look like? Or adding inclusive measures, you make the environments that honestly are there for innovation and do allow for the creation of new beautiful things that have a tangible, beneficial, and ideally positive impact on the world.
Amazing. So I'm hearing that it seems like inclusivity is like a constant process, and it's really just a very big picture thing. So Michael, I'd like to also ask you about your take on how participating in things such as, you know, advocacy, leadership, and volunteering can also help young professionals on their path to establishing a successful career, whether that looks more like your path or more like Alexis's path.
Well, I think that Alexis has been really eloquent and passionate about explaining how her journey in focusing on inclusivity and Indigenous peoples and ERGs have actually helped her to stand out in her career at Splunk. Now, she was chosen to be one of 6,000 people to focus on making web pages accessible. It just tells you that you can stand out amongst a large group of people when you focus on issues that matter and you continue to develop yourself, right? So I want to say that early on when I started my business, I thought that doing a variety of different things would be good. And so I joined chambers of commerce. I joined the board of a nonprofit, which is Junior Achievement. I joined the Rotary Club in my local area, which is an organization that is the world's largest civic organization with over 1 million members. And they do a lot of really good projects for people. Whether it's delivering wheelchairs to other countries, delivering playground equipment to children in foreign countries that they don't have playground equipment like we do. The playground equipment we throw away is a treasure to kids in some other countries. And so Rotary would do things like that, but they'd also have local drives, like just giving a coat, one warm coat to people in the wintertime. And I learned that it isn't just about being in business and trying to make money, that you really want to also consider how giving back to the community builds your character and your ability to see that there is more to life than just being successful in business, being a strong leader, reading business blogs and business books, you know, that we have to balance our lives. You know, my business name is Build and Balance, and the definition behind it is build your business, balance your life. And so I do believe in volunteering, and you will find opportunities for leadership through volunteering, because naturally people who are good at what they do and they have a passion for what they're giving will rise up. And they will rise up and be asked to take on leadership positions. And you will find that in some cases, leadership will come faster to you through your advocacy efforts, through your volunteering efforts. And then that leadership will translate over to the professional realm. So opportunities are given to young people through advocacy and volunteering that they might not understand until they get into it. And then you might be really surprised with what you find.
And if I can build off of Michael's example, I actually just joined an associate board at a nonprofit called Interact Project. They are an org that's been around for 15 years and provide free design classes and career opportunities to Brown and Latinx youth in the Bay Area. Sorry, Black and Latinx youth in the Bay Area. I've been volunteering for them for 4 years now. And the reason why I wanted to volunteer is, again, to be the role model that I wanted to see. If you're in a room of Black and Latinx students and the teacher is Latinx, what does that tell you versus having non-colored representation in the room? And I have to say, there's so much that I've learned about things like, how do you fundraise? How do you host a gala? How do you present yourself on social media? How do you have the right voice and tone for your different audiences? And not only that, but also just building friends outside of work. And having like a family outside of your own family, depends on what your relationship to your family is. But being able to have those opportunities independent of your paycheck, I think is so important, because those are lessons that I call them just receiving with gratitude. And for me, as someone who identifies as passionate, being able to watch these students grow into high school and say like, hey, like I actually want to solve this problem in my community, or oh my gosh, like I get to go to art school on a scholarship, is the fact that, again, we're changing students' lives. And these are the same students who are being told by society and the media that the best, quote unquote, that they can be is a criminal with school to prison pipeline, or, you know, a gangbanger, a gang member. They're not smart enough or valued enough. And it's like, no, these are things that are embedded in the system to work against you. And now let me give you a tool that once you have, no one can take away from you. So echoing what Michael said, I highly encourage folks to volunteer and do something that's with your passion, because honestly, when you may or may not be burnt out from work, that's something that can fulfill you and give back to you personally.
Yeah, absolutely. On the last podcast, we were actually talking about this as well. And one person even spoke up and said, you know, if you're trying to get like a certain type of experience, let's just say you want to learn how to code, or you need management experience in order to progress in your career, you might have trouble finding that at your current job or in your career in general. But if you go ahead and work and volunteer for, you know, a cause that you're passionate about, you're going to be able to find that experience. You're going to learn so much more and so much faster. So I think what you're both saying is like really, really powerful. So let's switch gears now. I've heard you all mention this just slightly with like YouTube and stuff, but a super powerful tool nowadays is talking about your work online. And so let's talk about social media. Just to give you all a little bit of information that I have on my end, 45% of employers use search engines such as Google to research potential job candidates, with 20% saying that they do so frequently or always. In this same survey by CareerBuilder, they also found out that 51% of employers who researched job candidates on social media said they found content that caused them not to hire the candidate. So there's both social media for good and social media for, you know, not so good. So to both of you, how do you use social media to promote what you do, and what are some pitfalls that you should also avoid?
I can start off. I am going to confess, I am very bad at social media. And I think I'm one of those people who's always doing like 20 million things. And then I'm like, oh, probably should have posted about that. My Medium site is like 3 years of empty, not writing anything. My Twitter is like not super active. And I honestly feel bad sometimes when after I give a talk or presentation at a meetup, a lot of folks follow me and I'm like, I'm sorry, like I'm not going to give you the content that you'd like. So especially in the design industry, like something that's really critical to our breadth of work is our portfolio, which has your name on it. So, you know, if you have any inkling of SEO, like people are going to find you. That's how people find you for a job. And something that I've learned as part of my self-advocacy journey is not being afraid of posting things that you think are really important and that are part of your values. Especially for me, I always have second thoughts about like, oh, maybe someone's going to be upset by this, or maybe someone is going to say that I'm wrong, or maybe I'm not good enough. Again, like that imposter syndrome kind of hits. And it's also a really good opportunity to just practice expressing yourself and your voice and your values, which, you know, it's kind of like hitting the gym. You have to work out that muscle, and it becomes a lot more comfortable and easy to do as you go on. So, you know, for folks who maybe work with a nonprofit or have a cause that's on social media, I highly recommend that, you know, you just practice, give yourself 15 minutes a week, or, you know, designate a certain, I live and breathe for my calendar. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I haven't figured that out yet, but I'll set up an hour a week where, you know, I set up time to write, or I set up time to collect my thoughts, or, you know, say, okay, I know after this event, I'm going to take 15 minutes to post a picture or something. So at least I'm keeping track, because one thing that is a benefit of social media is that folks can see if you're consistent in your values or consistent in your work, which, you know, for someone who doesn't update their LinkedIn as often, like that's super helpful. In terms of pitfalls, I mean, this is going to sound really cliche, but just like, don't be an asshole on the internet. Like, I think a lot of times, I know it's, they're like, great, like, that's awesome advice. But oftentimes people are so quick to jump to assumptions without understanding context and scenario. And you can really hurt somebody. Like, there is a rise in online bullying, and especially in times of shelter in place, like, we really have to rely on digital communication, because that face-to-face opportunity is not a, you know, public health risk that's worth taking. So, you know, understand context, understand, you know, again, like we've talked about failure and making mistakes, like, it's not your place to be like, oh, like, you're an asshole. You know, maybe you need to understand more of like the situation that has happened. Or, you know, before posting something, just do the research and you would save yourself a lot of time and embarrassment.
Yeah, so I can build off of that a little bit. I probably use social media a little more often than Alexis does, because I'm in business. Now, that you find that people that are in small business often use social media as a tool in a way to equalize themselves with businesses that are larger and have bigger budgets, right? I can't compete with Splunk's ad budget, but I might be able to write blog posts and create videos that might be just as popular, if not more, because I'm a small business thought leader, right? So that's how we can compete on the small business level. And when we think of the people who are looking for work, because I know this podcast is for people that want to differentiate themselves and show what they know, social media allows you to essentially have your own little media empire at almost no money, right? It's pretty amazing, actually. I mean, what we're doing right now is something that would have been really difficult to do 10, 15 years ago. And now it's second nature. People are podcasting like crazy all over the internet. So I created a presentation many years ago called Six Steps to Success with Social. And it's an acronym that the S stands for study. Like, study, learn. Remember we talked about getting educated? Like, study up and understand what you're doing. Alexis said, do the research. You know, understand the platform that you want to be on, whether it's Medium, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram. Study it and understand how it works. And what's the culture of the platform? And what are the people like that really engage on it frequently? And then organize. You know, put your information together, organize, and come out in a cohesive, literate, clear fashion. And then next is C is create, right? Be creative. You got to stand out. I mean, if you're not either really helpful or really creative, what you do on social media is just going to get lost in the noise in the mix, because there's just too much content. So try to be as creative as possible. And then initiate. That's the I, is initiate the contact. Be the person who reaches out. Be the person who comments, shares, likes. Like, initiating on social media is really important to succeed. Like, don't just be the lurker and the voyeur in the background, but initiate. A is analyze. Are you doing the right thing? Is what you're doing working? analyze your efforts, measure, right? Measurement's really important in the world of social media. And then the last one, L, is last. And the reason I say last is because social media works for people who endure, who continue to give and give and give. You know, Gary Vaynerchuk wrote a book on social media called Jab, 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 Left Hook. And the jab, jab, jab is all about giving. Give, give, give. The left hook is the promo where you ask for something. You have to give three times as much as you ask. That's a pitfall on social media that some people make, is they ask too much. They're an ask hole, right? Where they're actually asking too much. They want social media to give to them, but social media is really more about giving first. If you have the giving mentality and you have the idea that I want to share the best of what I know for free, then you could probably succeed on social media if you last. My efforts on LinkedIn and YouTube, which are primarily my platforms, have been lasting for years. And now I actually get business through my YouTube channel. I have a client in Australia that came through my YouTube channel. I get email from people in Africa, Asia, Europe, all the time, who have watched my YouTube videos and have gained and profited from them. Because I believe, for me, inclusivity is making my education available to people around the world. People in India, people in Africa, they can't afford to pay me. They don't pay me anything. And I give them 30-minute classes on how to improve your sales for free because I want to share and make my education inclusive. And so I've found that social media is very successful for me, but it's because I follow the formula and I stick with it.
I absolutely love that. I really love what you said about endure. My last job before working at ACS, I was at YouTube. And so I worked with YouTube influencers, and one of the YouTube influencers I worked with was this young man who was 21, and he wasn't, you know, the typical person that you would, you know, imagine would be like a YouTube influencer. He's like very different, unique, loved like makeup and K-pop and all of these things. But I one day was kind of curious, so I went back on his channel and I saw that he had been updating every single week since he was 16 years old on YouTube. And then the only week he didn't upload a video was the month that his mother passed away. That was to an extreme example, but you can build a following if you just keep doing it. Like when you first start out, you're going to maybe get no views, three views. You might, like, I even heard like a story once where one of the top YouTubers who has like a million, at least in our program, a million subscribers, the first comment he ever got on YouTube was a racial epithet. And that's absolutely terrible. But, you know, enduring and not giving up, it's not the people who, you know, just hit it big usually. It's the people that keep going. And as you said also, it's like, you know, the give and not just always the asking. So switching gears a little bit, you two both mentioned mentorship. And so for both UX advocacy and career coaching, there's a lot to learn and take in. So I want to ask Michael and Alexis, how did you two learn what you were able to learn, and how did you seek out mentors and resources?
I guess I can go. We kind of mentioned this a little earlier, but like I, pre-COVID, am a social butterfly, so I love going out to events. I really resonated, Michael, what you said about having a passion for learning. And one of the things I have been doing my best to do is to redefine what my definition of learning is. I think in Western society, there's such almost an obsession with written word, like textbooks and like, this is the law. And like, these are the things I must educate myself on. And I implore people to learn from just doing experiences, trying new things, talking to people who are of different age ranges and backgrounds and lived experiences and, you know, the country that they were born in, because you will learn so much that is not written in a textbook, or maybe, you know, the things that you have been trying to learn have been lost. Learn different languages, because then you get this whole different exposure that you couldn't get. And now that you, you know, have put in the work, like you can get some reward out of that. I have personally super benefited from joining Slack channels. I'm not sure how popular they are outside the design industry, but being able to find like-minded folks. So one organization that I really love is Tequeria. It's like taqueria and tech put together, and like their icons are taco. It's the greatest thing ever. They're a 503c dedicated to raising visibility of Latinx in tech. And I can't express how much gratitude I have eloquently for this organization. Like, I got a referral to Splunk, which got me into Splunk for my job. My first two or three speaking opportunities came from Tequeria, and I have a bunch of folks who, you know, are Latinx and or first generation and or queer who I can go and talk to and know that there is a lower barrier to entry of them understanding me and why I want to talk to them. I think something I struggled with in college was, you know, this idea of networking and mentorship with someone who didn't understand my lived experience, or best yet was like, oh yeah, like my cleaner's Latina, so I totally understand where you're coming from. And I'm like, don't know how to feel about that. We'll get back to you in 2 weeks. So, you know, being able to find people who have either walked a similar path, a parallel path, who have been trailblazers who you want to follow has been amazing. And I think for me, something that took me a while to learn, but now I really appreciate is as a mentee, mentors can learn just as much from you as you can from them. Like, it's not necessarily like a mentee is not leeching off a mentor. And if you do, you might want to evaluate how you define mentorship. But I have been so humbled that folks who I idolize or like my, you know, people I really look up to say, I learned just as much from you as you do from me. So I think recognizing that it's not so much as putting someone on a pedestal as you're a human being. You both end up 6 feet under when you die. Like, and there's so much that you can learn by just treating folks like human beings and not worrying so much about, you know, titles and what, you know, company is at and like what stock price their company is. Like, it's just you're engaging with someone and learning from them in a new way that can only make you a better person.
I agree with so much of what Alexa said. You know, the people that have helped me a lot in my career since starting my business were people who I've partnered with. And so it wasn't really classified as a conventional mentoring relationship, but I've partnered with them on projects. And these are people that are generally more successful than I am. And they're looking for somebody who has some grit and has some potential and has some hard work ethic. And I've done the work. Like, I've often worked harder and given more because I'm grateful for the project. I'm grateful for the opportunity to work with this person who's more successful than I am and get paid to learn alongside this person. Generally, they're making more of the fee than I am, right? It might be a 60-40 or 70-30. It doesn't matter because I'm getting great experience and getting paid to do it and learning alongside a master, someone who's really good at what they do and what I want to become good at. And so that's been kind of my take on mentorship and how it's worked for me. And it's definitely made me better. Like, I received a comment one time from one of my mentors, mentor partners, and he said, you know what, you're kind of like a hidden gem and people just don't know it. Like, you don't do a really good job of presenting yourself online. And what I took from that, it was kind of like some people might say it was a backhanded compliment. No, but no, it was a compliment. He was saying that you got to make a little more effort improving the way you present yourself online. And so I did. I built a better website. I went to higher production value on some of my YouTube videos and decided to invest more in just how I presented myself and upped my professional level. So that person helped me a lot. And it was just one thing that you learn from people who have walked your path ahead of you. So mentoring is really a good thing.
Amazing. Really great comments from both on mentoring. And there's so much you can learn. I love that what you said, Alexis, about it being like a two-way street. You know, they learn from you as much as you learn from them. And one thing that I strongly believe is you should never underestimate the creativity and knowledge of young people, because they're always learning about the newest technology and things are always changing and evolving. So on that note, a lot of young people also, you know, tend to be a little bit shy, have trouble finding their voice, even in college, out of college, at their first job. So my question to you all, and you're both like really great at speaking, but do you have advice for people that have trouble finding their voice or with being a thought leader, people that might be uneasy in leadership positions, or people that are just very introverted?
So I would say that I'm an introvert. And I found that being an ambivert helps a little bit, where I can kind of flip back and forth between being introverted and extroverted. And I've learned the power of the switch. And what I mean by that is when I am presenting, when I'm leading, when I'm training, whatever I'm doing, like in this situation right now, I flip the switch. I have found that there's a little switch inside that I can turn on and be on for a certain period of time. And then when it's over, I flip the switch back, and then I rest and relax and rejuvenate, right? And you have to find that switch inside of you. Everybody has that switch that I think sometimes introverts put a little too much dread into an upcoming event, and they dwell too much on it. You just have to flip the switch for a short amount of time. Shine for that period of time. Like, give yourself that opportunity. Introverts can shine just as much as extroverts. And sometimes we focus on extroverts too much, but introverts have so much to share and so much to offer. And so maybe your medium isn't video. Maybe it's audio like a podcast. Maybe it's the written word. Maybe it's experiences, lived experiences like what Alexa says. Just go out and be with some people that you know, like, and trust. But get out there and do something that works for you and just flip the switch just for that moment, knowing that you can always flip it back off. It's not forever, right? The extroverted experience isn't forever, but if we want to get out in the world and stand apart, we're going to have to flip the switch once in a while.
You know, I've never heard it as flipping the switch, and I personally identify as extroverted, and I have to say, as even as someone who is extroverted, I still have to flip the switch. Like, there's, and for lack of better words, right, there's this place I go to when I give a talk or when I give a presentation that allows me to just be myself and say, you know, think, I am the subject matter expert. I am fully capable of giving this presentation. I am fully capable of answering any questions that come my way. And, you know, two things that we've brought up in the podcast earlier were, one, remember that leadership and management aren't exclusive to one another. Anyone of any age, of any career experience, of any background can be a leader, can become a leader. And it's a muscle, like, you have to practice it. So give yourself, my recommendation would be, you know, small moments, right? Maybe go to a meetup of, if you're super introverted, 10 people and say, okay, now I'm comfortable with 10. I could go to 20. Oh, okay, now I'm comfortable with 20. I could go to 100. Oh, now I can go to this 1,000-person conference. Oh, what if I could talk to this 1,000-person conference? Maybe you'll have to go back to talking to 20 people and work your way up there. But that's something that has definitely helped me. And also, you know, Michael, you brought this up, surrounding yourself with really great people. Like, I have what I call my board of creative directors of my life. And it's a very close group of friends who I'm able to practice presentations with or do new thought content with and be like, what do you think about this? Like, am I, you know, one, I'll give an example using accessibility. So there's a lot of talk around whether you say or you use person first language versus disability first. So if I say someone with low to no vision versus a blind person, and depending on who you talk about, there's, you know, no black and white answer to that, right? It largely is based on personal preference or like where you grew up in the community, whether your disability is situational versus permanent versus temporary. And, you know, these are the things that you learn as you go through, but until you experience them, like, you're and talk to people, you're not going to know. So, you know, pace yourself. This isn't something that happens overnight. Like, I think one of my first talks was 200 people, and I was like shaking. I had cards, and there was someone in my circle who was like, give me those damn cards. You don't need them. You're fully capable of doing this. Go out there and give a 5-minute talk. And I did it. Was very nervous. Like, you can hear that I'm nervous in it. But it works with time. And I think, you know, depending on what communities you talk to, or like, again, finding the right platforms of people, I think people are really forgiving, and we don't tell ourselves that. Like, we jump to, oh my God, everyone's going to hate me. Everyone is not going to like what I have to say. No one's going to care about it. And honestly, like, people do. Like, it's actually the opposite. So give yourself some credit. Remember, that's a muscle. Practice, practice, practice.
Awesome. Yeah, super, super great words, everyone. I think, especially being in leadership positions and then seeing young people and then seeing them grow and find their voice and then do incredible things that you would never have imagined. Wow, like, this high schooler grew up and became this person and did that and started his own photography business and is giving a speech. It's a really amazing moment. And as you said, you know, it's small steps. It's not going to happen overnight. So we're almost at the end of our time, but I want to ask you all a question and then leave with a final note. What drives what you do?
Okay. I guess I'll go first on this one. So I think what drives what I do, honestly, is the servant's heart, that I truly am interested in giving of myself to help other people. And if I'm able to make a living doing that, then it's the perfect combination. And that's why I entered this field of professional development, because it helped me so much early on in my professional career to go out and learn from others who were investing in other people's lives. And so now I'm giving back and investing in other people's lives and being compensated fairly for it, and able to then give back through like videos on YouTube or working with people who have very small businesses who aren't able to afford me as an executive coach, but can afford me as a small business mentor and consultant, you know. So it's really fulfilling to look at my business that way. And that's why I believe that I can do it for the rest of my life, because it's like volunteering meets the business world, right? Where I get to do what I love. I get paid. I get to help people. They look back and say that he was a great step in my professional journey. And now I'm going to seek my next resource and continue to grow. So that's what I would say about that. The drive to get up in the morning and go do what I do, it's there every day. Because I have a family and I have children, I do take a break on the weekends, but I could work 7 days a week because I like it so much.
That's a hard follow-up to do just saying. I think for me, it's two-pronged. One is I have this insatiable curiosity, and for me, it's always learning about something new. A startup that I used to work for had a value of constantly seek to learn and improve. And I think when you do things out of curiosity instead of fear, it allows you to learn so much more. And knowing what I know now, one of the questions I ask myself is like, well, how much better of a human being can I become? And how many more people can I help because of these new things that I know? And the other one, and this is, you know, something we covered already, but just, I want to be the next generation's role model for queer Latinx first gen folks. There are not enough of us in every single possible department or industry. And the only way that we can create safe environments is by people being brave and courageous and stepping into these roles and being trailblazers. And, you know, if I can help someone get into a design career or be the first in their family to go to college or have one less negative impacted coming out story, then, you know, how many more people can they help? And really, it's a chain reaction. So thinking about what you can do, I mean, Michael, to your point, one 30-minute workshop helps how many people, who helps how many businesses? And that's the beauty of our work when we advocate and when we exhibit leadership and when we try new things. So
thank you so much, Michael and Alexis, for your amazing words. This has been a really great conversation. I feel like I've learned so much, and I really hope that our listeners will learn a lot too. So I want to thank you all again for being on this amazing podcast. And check out our company, ACS Solutions, on more about how we can help you find the right business and technology resources or match you up with the perfect job. Follow us on this podcast channel and on our social media at ACS Solutions so you can stay updated on our latest podcasts and technology news. So make sure to follow this podcast channel and also follow our social media at Analyst and Ascent and ACS. Our next podcast will be an interview with our CEO at Ascent, Joseph Nordlinger. So thank you so much again, Alexis and Michael, your amazing speakers. And to our listeners, we'll see you soon on our next podcast.